Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We are previewing week 4. Coming up with a theme for this one was a little difficult because we had to decide, what do these games mean? It's not a big weekend like week 3, not a lot of marquee matchups, but we did sort of hit on a theme. Jason Kirk, college football editor for SB Nation, what was that theme?
I like that you said it was difficult because I think it took about 20 seconds. But the theme was, this is the week when something goes bad for everybody. Just taking a look at this schedule, and there's very little. There are very few encounters that'll leave with both parties walking away saying, that wasn't all that bad.
If you've ever watched a Clemson Georgia Tech game, no one comes away happy from that. USC plays Utah, and if USC loses, they'll be 1-3. If Utah wins, if Utah loses, they'll have lost to a bad USC team. Georgia, Ole Miss, no one knows what'll happen. Ole Miss could be 1-3 if they lose that game. Iowa and Rutgers, nothing but evil. Florida State and South Florida, if Florida State loses to both Louisville and USF, oh.
You lost to 2007 then.
Oh. I mean, there are Ryan Nanny joining us from SB Nation in New York. I mean, you see this, right?
Yeah.
There are other matchups that follow this pattern.
Wisconsin, Michigan State. I feel like if Michigan State loses that, that's pretty bad for them. And if Wisconsin loses, it's like, cool. So we're not going to contend for anything of worth in the LSU. Beating LSU was a waste of time. Boy, Syracuse, UConn, we're just going to glide on right on past that. Hey,
I feel bad already.
Here's a fun one with bad all over it. Duke, Notre Dame.
Wisconsin, Michigan State, I feel like that's not just like feeling bad. That's physically feeling
bad.
If you're in that game and you walk off the field, you're going to limp.
Penn State, Michigan is going to be bad, but probably not for most of the reasons we think. Because Penn State has essentially zero rushing defense. And I don't mean that in sort of a they're bad at it. I mean it doesn't exist.
It's not there at all.
Yeah, it's sort of like when the Millennium Falcon drops out of light speed and they're like, what do you mean? What do you mean the planet's not there? And you're like, the Death Star blew up Penn State's linebackers. Sorry.
Speaking of the Death Star blowing up, let's take a look at LSU Auburn. Oh,
boy.
Yeah, at Auburn. Either team that loses this game, it's bad. It's real bad.
I almost think this is the hottest potential. The loser of this is going to be in the hottest seat possible. There are a couple of exceptions to that. One is if Ole Miss loses at home to Georgia, I think things start to get very uncomfortable for Hugh Freeze very quickly. And the other is, if Colorado beats Oregon in Eugene.
Woo!
Because
everyone's pointing, like, the big trend that most people have been pointing to has been, well, Washington. Washington's pretty good. They might finally snap the streak to Oregon. Oh, hold up. Just hold up. Now, I know Sefo Liufau, the quarterback for Colorado, most likely injured, out with some variety of ankle that was given to him by Jim Harbaugh's charitable defense. But this is overall a much better team. And guess what Oregon can't do? Oregon can't defend the run.
Nope.
At all.
South Carolina at Kentucky, which Robbie Calland from CBS was fortunate enough to tell me, Kentucky is favored in this game.
What?
Which is, I mean, it's more a question of why is anybody this feels like the definition of game that should be a pick 'em, not as a, like, these two teams are equal, but no, we dare you to bet on this game, you idiot.
It shouldn't be legal to bet on this game.
Right. It's sort of like saying, death by poisoning or drowning. Pick 'em.
Take either one. We did have one that we thought maybe you'd gone too far.
Yeah. I wanted to say Nebraska going to Northwestern, but come on, Nebraska, they're not going to lose that game. This Northwestern team is terrible.
No one loses to Northwestern, not even Nebraska.
Yeah. That's sort of the border where it's like, okay, everything comes back to earth.
Yeah, but then after that, you got Arkansas, Texas A&M. Oh, man. Arkansas loses, especially in overtime. That is 3 years in a row with that exact arrangement, right?
But I
correct.
Honestly,
and
I think
if
that's...
If A&M loses, then we got to get Tom Herman in here.
See, I think that's the one that is the least bad. Like, outcome is automatically bad because the team that walks away from this game with a loss is it still only has one loss on the season, still only has one loss in conference play.
Only one loss with the entire SEC West schedule still to go.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, like, and we'll have the distinction of knowing that, yeah, they lost to a pretty good team.
So let's rewind a little bit here.
Sure.
There's a couple of theaters of operations I might want to focus on. The SEC West, the vaunted SEC West, kind of a mess right now.
Yes.
Like, kind of a mess, and in a way that it hasn't been for a while, because I even think Alabama's vulnerable. I know that's blasphemy, but I really think after seeing two games of Ole Miss, I can definitively state they're not real good. Not right now. They have potential, maybe, but they have to develop something like a run game, and their defense cannot hold up on the back end.
They've been real good for about 8 or 9 quarters out of 12.
Yeah. Yeah. They're capable of like one or two real good quarters a game. It's just the rest of it that happens to be a problem. So I don't think Ole Miss is that good. I have no idea about Arkansas. None. Absolutely none. I know they're 3-0. But they could have lost their first game.
They could have, but they didn't. And that kind of counts for a lot right now.
Yeah, it does get you 3-0.
I mean,
Auburn. Oh, God, Auburn.
Auburn's in a bad place.
Auburn is in a dark place, and they host LSU, which is a team more than capable of losing this game. This is the game that makes this is such an indeterminate forecast.
So here's
for this game.
Here's the good news if you are an Auburn fan. Everybody talks about, you know, Auburn hasn't won a home game in conference play in a long time, in a distressingly long time. But mm-hmm. But in that span, the teams to which they've, like the quarterbacks to which they've lost, to Deshaun Watson, they've lost to Trevor Knight this year. Those are like two reasonably, you know, Deshaun Watson's definitely a lot more than reasonably talented, but Trevor Knight looks competent this year. And last year it was like, yeah, they lost to Alabama at home. They lost to Dak Prescott. They lost to Chad Kelly. Like, they were losing to good quarterbacks. Do you know what LSU does not have?
A good quarterback?
Yeah. I mean, the one exception is Auburn lost last year to Georgia, and I don't care who was playing quarterback that game. You lost to a bad quarterback.
The other question I have here when looking at the Auburn thing, Gus Malzahn facts. I almost said you have some colorful Gus Malzahn facts. Would you like to share the one that you unearthed for the SEC West firing forecast today?
So this is Gus Malzahn's fourth season. Gene Chizik got 4 seasons and no more, no less. And if Gus Malzahn can win 6 of the remaining 9 games, he will be 1 game better than Gene Chizik was. And that list of games, I mean, there's a number of sort of, there's basically 3 gimmies on the schedule. But then after that, it's sort of like they have to win. Let me pull it up here. All right. So there's the LSU game. We're going to give them, these are the 3 we're giving them. We're going to say they're going to beat Louisiana Monroe. We're going to say they're going to beat Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's very bad. We're going to say you're going to beat Alabama A&M. That all seems fair. Now you have to win 3 of the following: LSU, Arkansas, at Ole Miss, at Georgia, at Alabama.
That's not happening.
And at Mississippi State. I missed one in there, but I it's going to be close. If let me put it this way. Auburn, as it is currently constituted, is not winning 3 of those games. Can they maybe figure it out by the time they get to the Mississippi State, Arkansas, Ole Miss stretch? Maybe. If they don't, though, I think we're going to look at the end of the year and say, yep, Gus Malzahn has exactly the same record as Gene Chizik, and he doesn't have the protection of a national title.
Yeah. Jason, I have a question for you. Can you help me play coaching carousel just a bit? I know it's week three, but I think we already have a pretty good idea of who might not make it.
Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. Because let's start with the aforementioned SEC West. And I just want the full doomsday scenario, okay? Now, even disregard the head-to-head. Let's assume that you get two jobs open in the SEC West. Two. A good, solid two. And that would be Auburn. Because I think that's done, if I just had to guess. That Auburn would be done. And then let's assume that you have an open Ole Miss job. Ole Miss or LSU. If I just give you, I'll let you run the option there, if you like. All right? Uh-huh. We have those two. Play that out. Just let's start playing that out in your head in terms of, oh, man, where do you even start looking?
Well, if you're Auburn, you're looking at Tommy Tuberville, Bobby Petrino, and Kirby Smart. Based on their last like 10 coaching searches, those were all on the list every time. And I don't think any of those would be a good choice right now. So you're going to start over with a new list, actually, this time. And I mean, everybody's going to throw their name in the Tom Herman pile, right? But I think people are assuming he's not going to go very far past the Gulf Coast. And maybe you try to convince it, like maybe you move the Mobile battleship up a little bit toward Montgomery, and you know, hey, look how close we are to water, coach, and try to get your name in there. Wow.
It's hard, especially when you consider this.
There's really nothing obvious for Auburn because you don't want to. You still have to contrast with Alabama Nick Saban. Like you don't want to go and Mark D'Antonio. You know, like you don't want to try and be Junior Saban. Like I don't know, certain SEC teams are.
Come on.
But you all, I didn't mention any names, because it would take too long. But you also. I mean, what you've been doing hasn't been working, so you kind of do have to bring it back toward the middle a little bit. Like, even though you gave up on, you know, like, we're super Gus Fast, we get out in there and do stuff, and it's real fun and all that.
Can I tell you my dream scenario?
It open up and start throwing the fucking ball. Maybe you're the SEC team that actually has quarterbacks. Maybe try that.
My dream scenario is that the Auburn job's open. Washington has a really strong year. Auburn backs up the trucks and says, "These are full of money, Chris Peterson. We will pay you an obscene amount of money."
God, that would be really weird.
Let me top it here. Chris Peterson says, "No, thank you. I'd rather stay at Washington."
And then,
based on everything we know about him, like he's probably not leaving that region ever,
yep.
And probably not for one that is the exact opposite of the lifestyle to which he is acclimated wisely.
And then I hope. Just because they're nearby, Auburn says, well, rather than fly all this money home, let's go see Mike Leach.
Now we're talking. So I think that is, I don't know if that's the right idea, but it might be the right train of thought.
It's just crazy enough to work.
Like, A&M's doing fine.
I have a dark, dark scenario, which I think is actually semi-plausible, given some of the coaching incest that we've had in the SEC West in the past. Are you ready?
Please.
Auburn, as they are wont to do, strikes out on their first seven candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Ole Miss fires Hugh Freeze early. And Ole Miss... early. I'm
it's
talking
been a
like,
while. Internal SEC West wife swap.
Oh, yeah. Here's what they do. They don't even consider the NCAA. This is just Ole Miss firing, like, I'm talking 2 weeks. Like, Hugh, leave. Like, they lose this game to Georgia, and it's all over before the Egg Bowl. So they're just already out. So they get the jump on the coaching search, and they hired their fifth candidate, right? Because at Ole Miss, you got to meet like 20 people, and they all have to think that you're swell and have great table manners, okay? So they strike out, and they ultimately get their fifth candidate, who is, yes, somebody who's still offensively aggressive, but somebody who also is not Hugh Freeze and will not recruit like that. That would be Sonny Dykes. They have to settle for Sonny Dykes out of Cal. Okay?
Oh,
still
boy.
Aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now, this leaves an opening at Auburn to fill. And Hugh Freeze takes that job.
Yeah. Okay. Because if you're an Auburn fan, you're thinking like, listen, I like the idea of the high school offense, but we just got to get dirtier to hang with Bama.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this fills so many slots at once for Auburn. Who's been most competitive with Alabama head to head?
Who's 2-1?
Hugh Freeze, right? Who will be able to recruit on the same level?
Hugh Freeze.
I didn't say how. I just said he would.
Hugh Freeze with Auburn's resources, which, look it up. It's bigger than Ole Miss's.
Results-oriented. Mm-hmm. That's all we're saying.
Results-oriented recruiting, okay?
Results-oriented recruiting is Brett Bielema. That's different.
Hey, guys, you want to go to Sandals? But
and then there's like James Franklin, which is like recruiting oriented results.
Exactly. And who has a program already in place to rehab coaches who might have had a touch or two of the NCAA dengue fever?
That Hugh would be Freeze awesome. And Bruce Pearl together at last.
This is entirely plausible, and it, mind you, it's already happened before. Who came to Auburn from Ole Miss? That would be Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah.
This would just be history repeating itself. And remember, if the SEC West is nothing else, it's not real creative. Even the dramatic storylines would be rehashed from somewhere else.
I like that. Instead of saying, they'll drag me out of here in a pine box, like Hugh Freeze would hit him with like something biblical, you know, like, I won't be stepping forth out of this tomb until the Lord calls my name on that third glorious morning. Whoop, time to go.
Help, roll that rock away. So it seems I am not here.
Or Hugh Freeze in private to his friends and confidants is like, I'm out of here like Moses out of Egypt, y'all. Bye.
And that great shining tiger said to me, Freezes, come forth.
Hey, man, Pharaoh blew a big lead, too. It's no big deal.
So then
I'm telling you, that's how it's been. And you know what? Nick Saban's been taking every firstborn out of every recruiting house.
Boy, we're going to get into an uncomfortable slavery metaphor real quick here, so we need to move on.
And the other part of this exercise was we have to hire for LSU, which, like, okay, so Charlie Strong is 2-1 with a not-so-tough Big 12 schedule ahead. I think it's not bold to say he'll stick around. Mm-hmm. Kevin Sumlin's 3-0, good out-of-conference win against UCLA. He could be fine as well. Like, recruiting could really take off for both of them because when Bud Elliott was at Texas camps over the summer, like, he was hearing a lot of kids say, we just want to see how Texas and A&M, you know, like, if there's stability there. If, you know, within the next couple weeks, we should have that answer, and then recruiting takes off, and then you say, oh, well, let's just keep them. So Tom Herman to LSU is starting to look like, you know, a lot of people are talking about that, and that's terrifying for everybody. Because it's not far from his favored area. He's going to get a lot of kids out of Houston. You have Louisiana all to yourself. He actually knows how to score points and via the quarterback position. I mean, if we're talking comedy, that's not the right answer because that ain't funny for nobody. But
I guess that's true. I think you want somebody a little more seasoned than Tom Herman if you're LSU. I mean, look, what he's done in Houston is very impressive, but it's a big jump. And I think you want somebody with Power 5 experience, who's played in big games, somebody fiery, who is looking to prove himself.
I thought you were actually being sincere, and I know where you're taking this.
Where am I going with? No, please tell me where I'm going with this.
You said fiery?
Yeah.
You said Power 5 experience?
Yeah.
A lot of experience.
This is a great game of Guess Who we're playing here. Please, no, tell me what my card says.
Brett Bielema.
I'm sorry. I thought you were working your way toward a little bit of helping.
Not that much experience, sir. I think it's time to bring Bo Pelini back to the big leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, by the way, where was he before the Nebraska
That's right.
job?
Oh, he was
That's
at LSU.
Time to bring Bo home.
You laugh. There's an index card, and it's got Bo Pelini's name on it, and it's in like spot number 9.
LSU fan, are you tired of all this up and down? You know, you don't know what kind of season you're going to get. Doesn't really matter how good your team is. You just want to pick a cruising altitude and just park it right there. Bring Bo home because he will get you to a level and stay on it.
I mean, Bo is not going to charge you a ton It's not gonna. You're not gonna pay a ton to pry him away from Youngstown. The major downside, if you hire Pope Pelini, Carl Pelini will get Mike the Tiger addicted to cocaine again.
Back when they were great.
I think Mike could stand to see more of the stadium. Mike spends a lot of time in his area. He's better now, isn't he? Mike was going under treatment. Last I saw, he's getting better.
I don't think it's a. I don't think it's a totally treatable thing. I think it's a little terminal, in case you're not familiar. LSU's got a tiger with cancer. That's a sentence that's just really weird to say, but they do.
Yeah, he'll pull through.
You know what? He'll have a good life.
So it's medicinal cocaine. It's fine.
He'll get in the truck if he wants to get in the truck. That's always been when people say, "Well, Mike hasn't been, you know, out in the stadium. What's going on?" If you don't know, the vets at LSU will only let the tiger decides. They open the gate, and if the tiger wants to get in, the tiger gets in. And if the tiger doesn't want to, it doesn't.
Here's the other thing. If the problem at LSU is that you keep bringing in an embarrassment of recruiting riches and nobody can sort of turn them into gold, Steve Spurrier, man. If you tell Steve Spurrier, you don't have to recruit. You don't have to coach road games even. You can do that over the internet. But we just need, like, think about the competent quarterbacks Steve Spurrier created in his times at Florida and South Carolina out of nothing. Now tell me you're getting LSU still getting 4-star, 5-star quarterbacks? This is perfect.
Who's your designated road game caddy?
Steve Spurrier Jr.
There you go. Done. Huh? Let me go ahead and roll through a few other of these games. Of course, Pain Week here, where in the zero-sum game of college football, everyone loses somehow in this week. There are a few other games that are mildly terrifying, I think, for everyone involved. We touched on Texas A&M, Arkansas just a little bit.
Do we want to touch on it more? Because
I am pausing, by the way, because there's a child crying right outside the fucking door.
That's fine.
All right.
It's a metaphor.
Fucking bawling.
That's
Listen,
a metaphor.
Man, better him than us.
Hold on. Record him real quick. That's our Florida-Tennessee preview.
Yeah. No. Okay. Sorry. I do want to touch on it a little bit more because this is a game, by the way, that Arkansas just hasn't won. Hasn't won at all. It's not like overtime losses, non-overtime losses. If you go back and look at the last 5 to 7 years, it's not been an even exchange for these teams at all. This would be a huge deal for Brett Bielema to win this game.
Yeah. This feels like, and this is an unfortunate phrase to use regarding Brett Bielema, both these teams feel like they're playing with house money a little bit. The season's going better than I think most people nationally predicted. The winner of this is, you know, looking like a strong silver medalist in the SEC West. And the loser is still, you know, is still in good shape. I think, I don't know, I just don't feel that much anxiety about this game.
Yeah. I mean, for this one opened at 3 and it swung to A&M by 6, which I was surprised to see it open so low. It's at a neutral site. It's at Jerry World. And I guess people are just counting on it being a close game 3 years in a row, but A&M's got the talent advantage across the board. I know that doesn't always count for a whole lot, but to me that seems a defining factor of this game. This is the Bud Elliott special of the week, by the way. Among big games, this is the one where you just look at the stars and say, yeah, I'll take that team.
Yeah, I will take the team with more recruiting stars. Worked real well for Ohio State, Oklahoma last week, so... let's just ride Bud Elliott to winnings.
Gross.
Just keep doing that.
Just one of the grossest things you've ever said.
I did. Even if it's a literal ride where we saddle Bud up, just grease him up, sheeny and shiny, like a great steed. We're gonna ride him.
I hate my life.
So much.
Yeah. The weirdest game on this week's schedule: BYU West Virginia at FedEx Field in Maryland.
Hell yeah.
Man, I'm just going to strike this one from the record. Shouldn't have happened.
I mean,
this game. Yeah. Well, why are you at FedEx?
With the likelihood of a fight breaking out both on the field and in the stands, strike this game definitely seems like the appropriate phrasing.
On the field, super high. In the stands, it's like BYU fans just like using all their patience that they've honed over the years, and like on the field, it's going to be wild.
You didn't have 150 doors slammed in your face for some Cletus to set you off.
Are you searching for answers to your questions? No, I'm searching for more shine. So if West Virginia loses this game, by the way, the Big 12's only undefeated team is Baylor. Is that uncomfortable.
I do want to name this BYU versus West Virginia game. I don't think they came up with a name for it, so I'm calling it Mission to the Moon. There it is.
The Mission to the Moon trophy, which will be of a man on Mars.
Purdue right now is so mad, but, well, we don't care about you, Purdue.
Well, they usually are, aren't they?
Yeah, what? You land a man on the moon, and you just exchange that for wins down the road. Sorry. That's how this works. Clemson, Georgia Tech, by the way, massively confusing game at all times. Mm-hmm. Always. This is just a weird game. It's at Grant Field. Remember, Georgia Tech's good for at least one terrifying upset of a ranked team a year, and it's on a Thursday. You know what Paul Johnson likes to do on Thursdays? That's right. He likes to kill moles in his yard, because Thursdays are for killing moles. And he also sometimes likes to upset Clemson.
Georgia Tech Thursday games are the, like, Spanish word that ends in an A but takes L instead of la. It's an exception, and you shouldn't pay any attention. Like, it doesn't actually teach you anything about the structure of anything.
I think, well, the Thursday game at Tech is unique because there is a home crowd, which is rare for a Georgia Tech game, but it's one where everyone didn't have time to leave work and go home to Gwinnett, where every Georgia Tech fan lives, and then make it back to the stadium. They're all just stuck there, and they're mad about having to sit in traffic for 1 hour to drive three blocks to get to the stadium. So there will be a home atmosphere. Like, it's magic. It goes from a sleepy, oddly shapen, like slapped together parts of three different stadiums. Like, you didn't unlock the same parts of the stadium, so you're just slapping together Stadium A with Stadium B and Stadium C. But it'll be an actual atmosphere, so that'll be fun.
We also Speaking have. Of,
I was gonna. Can I? Yeah, can I use this segue?
Yeah, go ahead.
You ready? Yeah, yeah. Here we go. Set it up. Speaking of oddly shaped, TCU is playing at SMU, and that means that means this. What? That means on Friday night, you get to watch SMU play one really good half of football before they kind of fall off.
Honey baked ham. White Mike gets to play another SEC team this week. Western Kentucky already played Alabama. Didn't really hang around with Alabama. That's fine. But this time they're favored. Do you know who they're playing?
They're playing Vandy.
They are playing Vanderbilt.
Are they not on a 1-0 streak against Vandy?
They are on that very same streak. Does Vanderbilt need to, like, pull the plug at this point on Derek Mason?
Well, for what?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no.
Like, technically, but for what?
Well, I mean, this feels like, how some teams in the NBA, there's a salary floor that you have to sort of pay a certain number of players, a certain amount. You have to distribute a certain amount of income. You don't have to hire or sign, rather, a high-priced superstar. You can get away with just saying, like, yep, we got nothing but rejects from other team and scrap, and we're playing for draft position at this point. Vanderbilt has to have a head coach. But that doesn't mean they can't just be like, yeah, we're just going to, you know what? We're going to give somebody the job for $300,000 a year and a parking space.
Yeah. No, this is interim time. This is my favorite. This is when you get substitute stepdad, right? This is when you get...
I'm going to look who's... I don't even know who's on the Vanderbilt coaching staff right now, but I'm going to... You guys keep going. I'm going to find out who...
Ed Orgeron. Doesn't just put Ed in there.
Perfect fit. Perfect cultural fit for the university and all its academic standards and its general populace. Yeah, perfect. I guess the idea that he's on the hot seat is like, I mean, what did you expect? Like, other than the freakish three last years of the James Franklin era, when, like, yeah, sure, the team was pretty good and you had You had a future bachelorette winner at quarterback, which boosted your national profile 5 years later. Other than that, what standard are you really holding him to? I don't really get it. Like, you're good at defense. Okay, cool. You're good at something. That's better than you've had for 99% of your history. I don't know. Why not just ride it for 3 or 4 more years? What's the harm?
That makes me despondent.
I don't see the point.
The next in the line of succession, I guess, would be Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator. And that's a terrible idea. So you know what? Just keep on keeping on, Vandy. It's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Just take the next 2 to 3 months. Do some homework.
Do something.
Maybe size it up.
Maybe in 3 years, Florida and Georgia and Tennessee all have a down year again like they did during your last big weird swing.
But what about Kentucky?
Oh, man, no. That's
sorry.
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, we've said this, by the way, already, that Mark Stoops might not even be in the building. Might not even be showing up.
Like right now?
Like right now.
He might have left.
I mean, he might just be
He
fishing.
Created a diversion and snuck out.
That's what I'd do. At this point, if you know what's going to happen, catch me running.
I think you got to Ferris Bueller it. You got to, you know, put a dummy in your office chair, set up the answering machine, just be like, oh no, I'm really sick. I can't, I'll come to the team meeting later.
Yeah, just put any other Stoops brother in there. And right. Once they speak and once they use like the pumpkin pie haircutted freak accent that they all have, you won't be able to tell them apart.
Yeah, just put Jed Stoops in there. Old Jed.
Who's Malk Stoops? I've never heard of this.
Cram Stoops.
I love old Cram. He's a great linebacker up at Malk State. I would also point to this in the circle of despair between Vandy and between Kentucky. Kentucky, everybody pretty much knew this year it's looking pretty bad. With Vandy, I would remind you that the entire SEC media corps snowed.
Yeah.
Absolutely snowed by this man.
Yeah.
At media. It's like, oh, I play for Derek Mason. He's got things rolling.
Well, yeah, and most media members can't play football, so that makes sense.
they might have to. So like that's when the media turns on you, like, we believed in you, Derek. You're 0-6. Get him out of here and bring in someone else who can win. That's like Vandy's thing. Robbie Caldwell, Derek Mason, their thing is like shocking you at SEC media days, and then everyone misses your coach.
Can we go back to the USC game real quick?
I'm looking at it right now, buddy.
Because there is a big thing that happened at USC that we have not mentioned. They've already decided that the Max Brown era at quarterback is done.
We should mention that, shouldn't we?
I can't remember the last time I felt so bad for a USC quarterback.
Because he waited 3 years.
He waited this long to start. He got three. And look, it should be noted that USC has lost to the number one team in the country and a top 10 team. And they've done them both away from the Coliseum. Like, Max Brown has struggled against Stanford and Alabama, that seems fair. That seems right in some ways, but he's already done. And worst of all, he's already just sort of like, once they put in the younger guy, that's kind of the end of it. So I sincerely hope Max Brown just has the best fall semester at USC. I hope everybody's super nice to him in classes. I hope he just has the most fun at parties. I hope he blows off workouts. I hope he just like really, really follows his bliss because it is not on a football field.
Yeah.
Or it won't be in a football field at USC.
Or he transfers to Alabama.
Florida.
And leads him to a national title.
Yeah. Also, that'd be fine too.
Sure.
Because that's what everyone does eventually.
Yep. You either transfer to or through or from Florida. You got to connect. It's like Hartsfield International. You got to go through there to get somewhere else. Okay.
And you're confused why the food isn't better.
Yep. True. True. And the facilities, not underwhelming, but you got to go through there. That's the point.
The act of transferring from Florida, of course, makes you a better football player. At what position? It's hard to say, but you will make money.
I mean, that said, well, no, I guess you can get a gun into Hartsfield as well. Never mind.
Yeah, you can. Hey, you can get it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, It'll stay in there, I'm afraid to say.
You gotta miss the first quarter of your flight, though. So,
at least I will say this too with USC, this will be going to Utah.
To Utah, yeah.
You don't ever want to do that.
Yeah, you really don't want to go to Rice-Eccles, not the entire state. No, I will not cast aspersions on the entire state. Parts of it, maybe, but not.
No, Utah's good. It's got good hills and stuff. I literally mean you don't want to play a football game there.
Oh no, that would be a bad idea. But USC has to do it. Utah, not really. Like this is every Utah team is the same. All of them under Kyle Whittingham, like every single one of them. They play good defense. They run the ball. They have a quarterback who can kind of throw. Like he looks like somebody who was told what throwing is. But had never seen it before.
And it's also a quarterback who, like, you look up in the media guide and you're like, holy shit, he's been playing for the last 3 weeks on a cracked femur. That's insane.
Yeah. In his interviews, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm good.
and every Utah team, of course, at least once per year, just destroys a team that I guess we would probably describe as fancy, you know, talented, super talented team. And hey, USC is one of the country's, you know, top three recruiters, so they kind of fit the bill.
Yeah, Utah comes into your high class modernist Japanese restaurant and ruins the bathroom.
I love this about Utah too, that it's very much in like Western character, right? To go, oh, you come in here with your horns swoggling offense and your big talk.
I don't know what accent this is. You're doing Linda from Bob's Burgers.
I'm totally doing Linda.
This is like Billy Crystal in the Western, except he's just Billy Crystal.
This is basically like Billy Crystal doing any accent, right? Billy Crystal, do a black guy. It's not offensive at all.
Yeah, there's just pain is the only way to describe how this schedule is going to play out. And I guess we have to talk about the Florida-Tennessee game now, don't we?
No, we don't.
Please? Should we?
Fine. We can discuss this. I guarantee you here are points of pain in this game. We've already lost our starting quarterback, that being Florida. Luke Del Rio out with a knee injury of some severity. Being a little Belichickian about it is Jim McElwain, however. He was restrained by his own players after seeing the injury and the replay, which was, yeah, a little dirty. Thanks, North Texas. For that, we have Austin Appleby at starter. Like all great quarterbacks, he came from Purdue.
Yep.
So, again, verifying the Florida formula that you have to transfer through Florida to get somewhere else.
Kyle Orton is a multimillionaire. Look it up.
It's true. Kyle Orton's made more money than you will ever make, and that is actually true. But Austin Appleby, go ahead. He's the starter this week.
Yeah, I had to look this up for another podcast I did earlier this week. But Florida, so far this season, yeah, they've played nobody. And yep, Kentucky, you're nobody. Congratulations. This defense has faced 69 passing dropbacks.
Nice.
There you go. I knew that was coming. And they have 16 sacks, which means that roughly a quarter of the time that a quarterback has dropped back to pass, they get tackled with the ball by a Florida defender. That's like the one thing that I will be truly shocked by in this game, which rarely has the capacity to shock, is if Tennessee can keep anything resembling a clean pocket for Josh Dobbs.
No, if they're like, I think it's all but guaranteed. They're going to move them. They're going to move them. They are going to shift him around. They will not let him throw from the pocket, and they're going to run. Like they will try. Jalen Hurd is going to win or lose this game for them on offense because they will not rely on Josh Dobbs. They can't. I am. If they pass more than 20 times, I am extremely worried about his welfare because one, he might not get to 20. He really won't. Defensively, Florida rotates like this. Like you and I are very hard on Florida.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not... Anybody who follows us on Twitter knows that and probably hates us for it. So.
Yeah, this is a defensive line that rotates eight deep. They rotate at least eight deep.
And they get a ton of pass pressure from the linebacking core and from the secondary. And like, I don't personally think Florida is going to win this game. I don't think that a lot of years, and I'm frequently proven wrong. But I do think that Josh Dobbs is not going to beat them.
Yeah, the weakness for, I mean, there's plenty of weaknesses for Florida. We can talk about that. But Josh Dobbs, he's going to have his hair on fire all day. And that's just from the defensive line. That's before you get into Alex Anzalone or anybody coming from linebackers. And if the ball does get in the air, well, that's a big problem for Tennessee, too, because Florida's corners are superb. They're really good. Like, these are just things that are true about this team that Tennessee has to overcome. Florida has to overcome a lot itself, i.e. having an offensive line.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's the flip side of this, is that neither one of these teams can pass protect very well. Neither one has enough of a deep threat to sort of punish you if you overcommit to the blitz at this point. They both have pretty good special teams play, both in terms of kick coverage and punting. They can't really get much going on return. So this absolutely feels like we're just going to watch them punt the ball all over the field. Somebody's going to make, you know, a big turnover. Something's going to lead to a score. Maybe somebody shanks a field goal. Maybe somebody has a terrible call go against them. And I don't know. This feels very much like a 19-13 game. And I mean that both in terms of score and in terms of year.
Yeah, especially because as a starting quarterback, Austin Appleby is a largely unproven character in Florida colors at Purdue. I believe he had 19 touchdowns thrown and 19 interceptions thrown.
But so, that's sort of like saying, yeah, you know, you were a terrible quarterback in that POW camp.
Yeah, I would take any Purdue numbers. Like, how many interceptions do you think you just walk on the field with? Do you think you just, like, they're like, oh, look, he's got two INTs. You're like, this is his first pass attempt. Yeah, it's Purdue. It's the Purdue handicap.
It's like, it's Harrison Bergeron. They just chain a couple of them to you to start. So
yeah, congratulations. So yeah, I don't. This is not a game that you should watch.
Jason, as somebody who has no stake in this game whatsoever, what is your estimated number of game minutes that you'll watch?
Probably most of it. It's pretty much the biggest game going on at the time. Let's see. Let's look at this time slot. No other games involving, well, Penn State, Michigan, which, whoo, man, that's going to get ugly quick.
Yeah.
I'll watch almost all of this, to be quite honest.
Please don't, for my sake.
Well, we only have so many minutes of Uncle Vern left in our viewing time. So, I mean, nah, this will be fine.
You watch Pitt, North Carolina is going to be great. You'll watch that instead.
Can we wrap up with a few questions to wash the pre-taste of Florida, Tennessee out of our mouths?
Please, yeah. Let's.
I wanted to start with probably Monty's question. At probably Monty here in Montgomery, where's the best coach firing potential this week? It's Oregon CU, isn't it?
That's up there. Yeah, I mean,
LSU Auburn, yeah.
If you had to say if one team loses this week and that's the end of it for this coach, I think that's one of them. If South Carolina beats Kentucky, that will be up there as well, although that's got a lot of like weird buyout stuff.
I think that was like fait accompli, right? Like they have to already be doing the paperwork on that,
so
right?
This is like fired now, right? Not
right.
Or usher
you to an early exit. Quicker than expected.
A lot of the teams with bad records are just playing starting over, you know?
Yeah, Hugh Freeze at 1-3 though.
I'll throw this one. If Duke beats Notre Dame, I don't think Brian Kelly's getting fired. I know Brian Van Gorder's getting fucking fired.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
All right. What else we got?
I have. Let's see. Following up on that. From at DAARAW, Darrell, could Clay Helton get the Lane Kiffin LAX treatment if he loses to Utah? Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Sure. You know why? It's USC. I assume they're capable of anything because, you know what? They left Lane Kiffin at an airport.
Well, yes, but that was a different athletic director. This is, you know, a former football player who ran for political office in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. So, I think we're saying head coach Lynn Swan.
Yeah, can I install himself? Sure. Can I give you this? Who hired Clay Helton? Was it Lynn Swan?
No, it was not.
No, It wasn't Lynn Swann. Do you think Lynn Swann talks to Clay Helton much?
Maybe in like real casual ways.
Oh, like holiday cards?
Sure. Maybe let's go with that.
I don't think they've gotten a holiday together yet. Did they do cards for like the 4th of July?
Sure.
Do you think T. Martin regrets sticking around?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure he does.
It really hasn't. You know, his name, I feel like there was a spell there where everybody was like, yeah, T. Martin's really doing some good things at USC. And just nobody talks about T. Martin anymore.
I can't imagine, by the way, how checked out a checked out USC team could get. It's like a checked out Miami team. Because if you are a checked out player in a place where there's nothing to do, you might reengage. You might say, I have nothing else to do. I might as well be a pretty good football player. In Los Angeles or Miami? Oh, you can check all the way off the reservation, buddy.
Yeah. That'd be so sad if Clay Helton got canned.
But if that happens, you know who they have to hire as the interim? Clay Helton. So he's good to go. No worries about Clay Helton.
He's like a starfish. As long as part of his radial center is there, he can regenerate. And he keeps an arm in his office, so he'll never go away.
I got one more.
It's like goddamn Wolverine. When you cut his head off, his head will just like crawl back to his spine.
Yeah, it's the Deadpool of the Pac-12. At VT Ben wants us to remember something. Please remind your listeners that FSU kicked a field goal down 46 points in the fourth quarter. I would like to do what the people want. I want to give our audience what they demand. What they demand is to hear that Florida State kicked a field goal when they were down by 46 points in the fourth quarter.
What, is this the Warriors came back or fell? We're up 3-1 and fell.
No.
Yeah, I'm gonna make it my new Twitter background
because it suggests it suggests that Florida State was up at some point in this game. Well, I mean, maybe it does. I just want to know that. I really need to know what the circumstances of this. I'm sorry that I'm holding us up here, but.
The circumstances? Well, I think it was in the course of a 43-point historically bad loss.
Sure.
To Louisville.
I mean, it could have been
46. I enjoy this, by the way. This is how downtrodden Florida State fans were when they ran face first into this. I only had one person who said, oh, yeah, but you're just mad that, you know, you're not going to score that many on us. As if you can hurt me at this point as a Florida fan. Mm-hmm. As if there's some low that we have not hit at this point. I mean, never been shut out by Wake Forest, but, you know, other than that.